Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
He's a cardiologist. He's a chef. He's America's culinary interventionalist. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Michael Fenster.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Are you ready for the scrumptious and the salubrious all wrapped up into one tasty treat? I know that you are, and I know you know. That means it's time once again for Code Delicious. I am Dr. Mike, and I am very excited to have our special guest on today. Dr. Laura Kelly practices medicine-based principles of nature. And you know how near and dear that is to my heart. She uses nutrients and natural medicine. This approach to primary care combines functional medicine, TCM or traditional Chinese medicine, and the tools of Western medicine. It's integrative, and that builds a complete picture of the body. She's also the co-author of a new book, The Healthy Bones Nutrition Plan and Cookbook. And Laura, Dr. Kelly, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Hey, Dr. Mike. Thanks.
Great to have you. Hey, can you tell the folks a little bit about yourself? Because I love the way that you, you know, combine so many different aspects. And so often, I think, in approaching health and healing and medicine today, we're exclusionary. And, you know, it's about, hey, a Western approach. And I don't even like the term. Sometimes they say, you know, it's alternative medicine. I think it should be adjunctive. And you've done such a great job of being inclusive. So I'm really curious, and maybe you can share with the folks your background and how you got to where you are.
Sure. Well, just a quick response to that. My concept about medicine is that medicine is whatever works, right? It doesn't matter where it comes from, and it doesn't matter, you know, of course it matters who applies it, but it doesn't really matter where it comes from. If it works for that person and it works for their body, to me that's medicine. So I was starting off, I have some doctors in my family, and I was starting off to think about medicine. I had always listened to my body. And I never really got sick, and it just seemed like a natural step for me to learn more about the body and about medicine. So I started a pre-med program, and as I worked further into that, it became apparent to me that this wasn't actually the way I wanted to do it. I was really interested in a broad spectrum of looking at the body and understanding how it interacts with the world and what wellness was, right, and how to not get sick. You know, those are the things I was sort of more interested in.
Now you threw me way back in the days of my pre-med days, and I've got to say, you know, honestly, and maybe you correct me if it's come up in your practice, but I have yet to really use calculus derivatives to heal someone.
Absolutely.
And you know.
You know, and there's nothing wrong with, I mean, that type of education is fantastic, and it creates a you know, specialized, refined way of thinking and delving into problems. But that wasn't what I wanted out of it. And so I hadn't had any experience in any sort of alternative, quote-unquote, medicine before, but I thought there must be other ways of thinking about this. And so I started to look around, and I found traditional Chinese medicine, and I said, wow, this is strange and interesting. And there's a philosophy behind that medicine, which is very deep, and it's based on principles of nature and Taoism and understanding, again, where we are in the spectrum of the universe and the world, in this natural world, how do we fit? And that made a lot of sense to me, and I said, well, I think I'm going to look into this. And I started reading, and I started looking, and it's a very documented medicine. The textbooks that were written 5,000 years ago are still used. The human body hasn't really changed since then, mm-hmm. right? We've evolved
Absolutely.
Maybe in our minds, but the body's the same. So there's a lot of documentation to the medicine, which was very attractive to me as a research mind, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I just sort of delved down that path and just started digging into medicine from that angle. And ended up here.
You know, one of the things I think that's so interesting to me, and I'm by no means an expert, although I've had some encounters with Eastern philosophies and Eastern inspired medicine, is how broad ranging it is. And as you said, and I think this is very important for the listeners to realize, although it may be, you know, and some of these concepts may be fairly new to the Western mind, you know, traditional Chinese medicine, a lot of these Eastern or Asian approaches, however you want to label it, they've been around a lot longer even than Western medicine. I mean, you mentioned 5,000 years, and I think one of the first textbooks, and again, I'll defer to your expertise, the Yellow Emperor's Book of Medicine. I mean, that goes back, you mentioned, what, like 5,000 years, correct?
Yeah, that's sort of when the government decided to gather, as far as, I mean, I'm not an expert in actually Chinese medical history, unfortunately, but I know that the governments at that point sort of stepped in and said, you know what, let's gather all of the information that we have from all of the physicians, family physicians across the country or in the areas, and put all the medicines together. So that's when sort of things started to crystallize and become formalized in that
country. Folks also need to appreciate how very, and I use this in the broader aspect, holistic approach, in that there's many things. It's not just acupuncture, it's not just herbal medicine, it's not just the I Ching and these sorts of other things. There's a lot that goes in. It's a very comprehensive approach. Is this how you approach it, or do you, specialize? Because, folks certainly can go to see an acupuncturist for this or that, or go to an herbalist for this or that. But in the approach to Chinese medicine, I often think about it as being, one of the great examples of inclusive medicine, the epitome or maybe even the definition in terms of it being holistic.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the way I think about it is that we have Western medicine in the West, right? And it was a comprehensive system developed to treat the entire body, to treat any problem, right? And that was the same thing with medicine in China, right? They were Chinese. So they have Chinese medicine, which was their medicine, which was developed to treat the whole body and any problem that was encountered. So it's an entire system of medicine that, just like the West, it's a completely different approach, but it is a comprehensive system just like ours. So,
yeah, I think in some ways, I would even say, I think in some ways, it's a little bit more applicable for some of the problems we deal with today. You know, Western medicine basically is triage medicine. I mean, what I do as a interventional cardiology has its roots in battlefield, surgical medicine, triage, etc. Dealing with an acute process. You got a flat tire, we're going to change the tire. We don't put really, I think, my opinion here, enough emphasis in Western medicine in saying, well, why do you have a flat tire? Oh, by the way, you keep driving over broken glass. Maybe you should take a different, road home. The approach for Eastern, again, more traditional Chinese medicine, they do look at the whole person, and they're like, well, how come you're sick when no one in your house is sick? So what are you, what's wrong with you that's different, that makes you susceptible in the environment you're in to whatever it is? So I think in some ways it can be a little bit superior, specifically in addressing what confronts us today, which is, as an average cardiologist, I'm not dealing with battlefield wounds. Certainly that is, an aspect, an important aspect of Western medicine, but we deal with these chronic problems, these chronic diseases, this inflammation that's, an epidemic. And I don't know that we're really equipped to deal with it, maybe as well as you are.
Absolutely. Well, the integration of the medicines, first of all, is something that is a phenomenal boon for everybody. The tools and the testing and the technology that the West has devised for medicine is far superior to anything else. And it's really incredible to be able to use these tools. We can get inside the body. We can see on a molecular level exactly what's happening. We can understand nutritional levels. We can understand up to a very fine detail. And on top of that, we can use genetics. So we can combine all these wonderful tools that have come out of that medicine. But you are correct, in my opinion as well, that medicine is great for acute situations, but dealing with chronic disease, what you're really dealing with chronic disease, and I know that you know this, is nutrition. So if you're dealing with, if you're looking at an older medicine like a Chinese medicine, even all the herbal formulas, what are herbs except for concentrated nutrition? So looking at that system, it was a nutrition-based system. Diet was the first intervention. And coming back to that situation now where Western medicine is saying, you know what, we're actually not equipped for this particular situation. We need to go back to the concepts of nutrition. All of the tissues in our body need to be healthy, right? We rebuild a lot of these tissues on a daily basis. And if we don't have those basic nutrients present, the tissues aren't going to rebuild properly. The immune system is not going to be present properly. So it really does come back down to these basic principles. And Chinese medicine is equipped to deal with that. And again, putting that layer of Western thought and testing and diagnosis on top of this kind of treatment is really a perfect situation to get people better.
I absolutely love that, and I am in 100 and gazillion percent agreement with you, and I really hope that's where it goes, because I've always, my take on it has always been that, as you point out, we have great technology. We have the ability to just tear things apart and say, oh, you know, it's this particular bacteria that's causing a problem. You've got an infection, and this particular antibiotic can take it out, and this is really powerful. And in essence, you know, we can diagnose, you know, what's wrong with the tree, but Western medicine has no idea what's going on in the forest, which is where I think that combination of the Eastern-Western perspective, as you have pointed out so eloquently, integrating them can, you know, be so really powerful. And I hope that that's where we're heading with folks like you and into the future of, you know, medicine and healing. And is this the kind of thing that drove you to write the book, the Healthy Bones Nutrition Plan and Cookbook? Or was there something specific that drove you?
Well, there are two things that drove me, and one of them is that my mother had osteoporosis, and she had declining bone mass for 15, 18 years, something like that. And she wanted to, her doctor said to her, if you don't take this drug, then I don't know if I can treat you anymore because I'm afraid you're going to break your bone. And she said, I don't want to take the drugs. Again, I wasn't from a family that was a particularly alternative medicine family, but she just sort of was, her mind told her, I don't want to take this drug. So she called me and she said, I don't know what to do, but there must be something else to do. And I said, well, I don't know yet either. I was still in school. but I said, you know what, give me a couple of months and let me see if I can wrap my head around the problem. And so I took a fracture map of the world and I said, okay, where are there high fractures and where are there low fractures country-wise and why? And so I answered that question over a few months, and I put together a plan for her, and I gave it to her. And I said, here, these are the things that are affecting bone
You made me so curious. So what did you find? Where were susceptible population? Was it all across the globe, or was it isolated to certain areas?
It seems to be isolated by country. The first thing I found was that the countries with the highest rates of fracture are the Scandinavian countries and America. And this was an interesting thing because you look at the northernmost European countries up there and they have what they call a vitamin D winter, which is what basically there's no sun for a long time. So that seemed to be a correlation, right? Not a lot of sun, not a lot of vitamin D, and very high bone fracture rates. So I actually used fracture rates as a point of reference. And America was an anomaly. It was sort of like, well, we have a lot of sun and there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of opportunity and there's a lot of nutrition.
If somebody doesn't believe that the older folks in this country are getting enough sun, go to Florida anytime. Come visit me in Florida sometime and I will show you. All you have to do is drive and you will see, you know, I think, you know, we have the most senior population there and they are out getting the sun. So I guarantee it's not the sun in America.
Not in this country, right. So, but it was the first clue for me, like, whoa, this looks like a dietary issue. And then looking at the very lowest fracture rates historically, which is actually changing dramatically now, but historically the lowest fracture rates were in Asia, in Japan specifically, and China also was low originally. As those diets are shifting, the fracture rates are going up. And it's even taking into account the difference of genetics in things like a vitamin D receptor that happens with the Japanese population, nutrition is overcoming any of those genetics and raising the fracture rates enormously. So the book was originally written as an exploration for my mother to have her, help her not take the drugs that she didn't want to take. A lot of people showed interest in the work, and eventually a publisher said, "Can we publish this?" And I said, "Absolutely." And the second reason I wrote the book was because I can treat only a limited amount of people on a daily basis, right? I'm limited to myself and how much I can do in a day, but I would love to be able to help a lot more people than that. And writing books like this, I think, are a responsibility. I hate to say that, maybe, but it is to some degree, because I can do this work and I can understand it and I want to share it and get as many people healthy and get as many people activated in taking care of themselves as possible. And this is possible with this kind of medicine. This is possible with this kind of medicine, with nutrition. I can't be there in their kitchen cooking for them every day. I can't, I'm not holding their hands like that. So, but I can give them all of the information they need to do it themselves. So that's the other reason I like to write this book.
That is absolutely great. And, I don't think we necessarily help people when we do it for them. But, if we teach someone and then they can teach, their neighbor, and then they can share the information. And in the communication networks that we have available today, one of the great things about technology, we're on the radio here, but, folks are downloading us on podcasts, from different outlets, and they're listening and then they're sharing and then they're getting the books, online and sharing those books and information through social media. We can get the word out quickly. And when things like this have value, then, hopefully they spread, they get a life of their own. And I think one of the things that really impressed me about your book and your approach was the emphasis on natural foods. And that's something, again, forgive the pun, but there's always at least one on my show somewhere. As a cardiologist, that is incredibly near and dear to my heart because it is so important. But as a chef, it's also critically important. And this is where I think we're seeing such a benefit, where people are thinking, hey, this farm to table movement is really great because I'm getting fresh stuff and I'm eating tomatoes that have flavor and my vegetables don't taste like, the cardboard or plastic that they're packaged in at the supermarket. It's not something new. You're reaching back and bringing this concept that's thousands of years old with natural food. So can you tell our listeners a little bit more about the program that's in the book and just highlight, your perspective on the importance of using, wholesome, authentic, natural foods in the program?
Sure. One thing just to comment on what you said is that we are coming back to this movement of natural food, but as you really clearly point out, I think in a number of places, I don't want to use the word processing, but the preparation of that food, a lot of the preparation methods were lost along the way. And it's up to us, again, who have been doing the research and doing the work, to bring the food preparation methods back because they're so important. One of the things that is the case, there are a lot of anti-nutrients, I don't know what you want to call them, but phytic acid and oxalic acid and these things do have an effect, and that's why ancient cultures prepared their grains or sprouted their beans or whatever the case may be. So the book I would call not really a program, because I'm very much a believer that everybody has their own way of doing things. And so my goal is to provide the information for people in a way which is interesting and digestible.
That's a good
what
pun.
I find in my practice is that, huh? Right.
That's a great pun. You get one. You get points right there for that one.
You must be rubbing off on me. So people, what I find is that the more I explain to patients in my practice, the more they are engaged, right? The more they understand rather than just here, mm-hmm. go do this, right? If I explain to them what's happening in their bodies or what's not happening in their bodies, and why this particular thing might help it or how it would change, they're interested. And then suddenly they're doing the things that they need to do and they're asking questions. So I wanted to make a book that was like that, that was that explain to people the sort of the basic science of what their bones are and how they work and why they don't work when they start to get weak, and then provide them with information about food and nutrients and supplements, depending on how people wanted to go about in their own particular life bringing about these nutritional changes. You can use supplements, you can use recipes, you can be a vegetarian, you can be a carnivore, whatever it is you want to do. So it was important to me to not have a program, but to have, here's everything you need to know, now go and run with it. And so laying out how bones work, as calcium enters the body, it has to be, you know, digested through mm-hmm. through the intestinal tract. There's two points of digestion. One of them needs vitamin D. The other one needs a sort of a simple sugar. So if you don't have those two things along with your calcium, it's probably not going to even get absorbed very well through your digestive tract. Once it gets through there and it gets into the bloodstream, you have to activate osteocalcin. So you need magnesium and you need vitamin D and you need vitamin K2. So you need all of these things to be present all at once to get to the bone. And then there are systemic factors. What sort of medications are you on? Are they interfering with calcium absorption? Or is there a lot of inflammation in your body that's, you know, actually breaking down your bone, even if you're trying to fix it? So I wanted to lay everything out as much as possible and share with people, these are the factors that affect the situation that you have, and these are the things that we can do about it.
Well, and you do that very well. And I think, you know, what's very fascinating from my perspective is that we see, you know, so often, particularly in this country, you know, in terms of medicine for the general practitioner, the family docs, the U.S. population is suffering from a vitamin D deficiency. Yet one of the interesting things that you bring up in terms of, you know, for the calcium and also for the vitamin D is the medication and the right kind of foods. Well, you know, people don't realize that, you know, the precursor for our body to make vitamin D is 7-deoxy cholesterol, essentially.
Right.
And so
right.
We take these medicines to suppress it. We make sure that we don't get in the diet. And, you know, I did a lot of research into that. And it was very interesting because it is not exactly clear on that pathway exactly where and how much of the enzymes that control those reactions are located. And it was completely unclear as to whether certain bacteria in the gut microbiome may be facilitating or inhibiting this reaction from taking place in terms of, as you pointed out, the important absorption of this and other cofactors, you know, for proper health. And what we do know, I think, and I think you would agree with this, is that when we eat the foods, natural foods that you emphasize in the book, and again, folks, that book that you want to pick up about, you know, 20 or 30 copies to give to family members and friends, and folks are like, it's the Healthy Bones Nutrition Plan and Cookbook. You know, that is very important because the gut microbiome has co-evolved to co-metabolize these natural foods. And when we're eating things that have been developed that are not real in a laboratory in the last year or two, we throw that way out of balance, you know, in my opinion. But I think that the research is beginning to substantiate that opinion. What's your take on it?
Oh, definitely. I mean, as you know, and maybe your listeners know, there are more bacteria in our gut in terms of DNA than human cells in our body. So we're actually far more bacteria than human in that regard, and that's a huge, that's 10 times more than us. So that has an impact across our entire system. There's gut and brain interactions, as I know you know, and there's gut interactions to do with every disease that we encounter, every chronic disease for sure. You know, as the foods enter the digestive system, the natural foods themselves, nature has done this incredible job, for example, with milk, which is a contentious issue, but I'm going to use it because it's an obvious, it's very easy to understand. Lactose is the milk sugar. In that milk, if it's not treated or processed, is lactase, which is an enzyme that helps digest the milk sugar. So as soon as you put that milk under high heat, you kill the enzymes and suddenly you can't digest the milk. So these natural foods contain enzymes and factors that help the body process the food and help the bacteria in the gut process the food. So that's a continuous cycle, and as soon as that's disrupted, it's imperfect, and now it doesn't work so well. Definitely agree with that.
And so if somebody, you know, I think the great thing that, and one of the reasons I so love this book is that by following the recommendations and, you know, helpful hints and things that you put in there, you know, yes, it you definitely will improve your bones. But, you know, this is something that you would see that works improve in terms of reducing your risk for cardiovascular disease and arthritis and diabetes and obesity. I mean, it's applicable. It's really healthy, though you focus on and give us great science about the bones, which I had not seen really in a lot of other books, whether they be the sort of cookbooks and food books or textbooks. You do a brilliant job there. But folks, I think following the advice that you give, you're going to get good health, not just healthy bones. Quickly, you know, what would be like 1, 2, 3 things that folks, you know, should do besides going out and buying the book?
Looking at nutrient intake, I mean, this is a big subject. There's a vitamin called vitamin K2, which is being studied now, which appears to have great effect in terms of calcium deposition and also cardiovascular health. So that's something to look into if you want to start thinking about that, and it's pretty much absent from the American diet. Another thing is sort of a bone vinegar. Putting herbs in vinegar releases a lot of the nutrients there, and that's a great thing to do and one of my favorite recipes in the book.
Those are really great. And folks, you can check this out at medicinethroughfood.com, Dr. Laura Kelly, KELLY.com, and the healthybonesbook.com. I highly, highly recommend it. Dr. Kelly, it has been a pleasure having you on the show today, and I hope you'll come back because I think we just touched the tip of the iceberg. We just had some appetizers today. Absolutely a pleasure to have you on. And folks, until we meet again, may the only pain in your life be champagne.